Hey everyone, welcome to our next edition of Taking Stock. You know, we're in such challenging times, as we've talked about on many discussions over the course of the past year, no more so than within our supply chains and our ability to, within consumer products, meet increasing demands with a multitude of supply chain issues, from supply to procurement to transportation. To logistics, to labor. There's a lot of challenges that companies are facing simply in getting products to market. We're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about that with a triumvirate of folks from Clarkston, all folks who have been on previous discussions of Taking Stock. We're going to have joining us Evan Shirley, Scott Shaw, and Ali Saleh. And all three of them are going to be able to provide perspectives across what we're seeing within consumer products, what companies should be doing differently to try to meet that increasing demand and be more reactive in the future. And we're also going to talk a little bit about some of the things that our government is trying to do and some of the regulations and methods that they're trying to put into place to try to mitigate some of the risks that we're currently seeing. So it's a great discussion. Enjoy it. Really enjoy the opportunity to chat with these three folks. So we'll talk to you on the other side. Thanks. All right, Evan, Ali, Scott, welcome to Taking Stock.
How are you? Nice to be back.
Thanks. How you guys doing? Nice to be back. That's right.
Hey, guys. How's everyone doing?
Good.
Good. Ali, you're on the other side of the world right now, aren't you?
I am. I am all the way out here in ritzy, glitzy Dubai for a few weeks, trying to see how their supply chain's doing, you know, get the inside scoop.
Hopefully better than ours here. thank you all for joining. I think this is the first time we've had a group discussion amongst four of us, so I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully we're not all talking over one another. I'll try to see if we can manage that, but looking forward to the discussion. And the topic today, as I mentioned earlier, is really around kind of supply chain disruption. And as you all know, I have the opportunity to work with a lot of our consumer products clients specifically. And without a doubt, the number one challenge that we've been faced with as an industry over the past 18 to 20 months has really been about our rising demands and the challenges in meeting that demand from a supply perspective. And that could be in terms of just simply keeping up with the manufacturing of goods, issues as it relates to labor, issues as it relates to transportation. And we'll get into all of that. But all three of you have had the opportunity to work closely with a lot of companies over the past, you know, year and a half who have been faced with these challenges. So maybe, Evan, I'll start with you. If you think about kind of at a macro perspective, you know, some of the supply chain disruption that we've been faced with, what are some of the biggest challenges that you see companies really struggling with right now?
Yeah, thanks for having us, Steve. And I think that's a great place to start. To answer that, I think it requires just a quick context or background on why here, why now for supply chain challenges. I'll certainly mention some that we're seeing our clients are experiencing. Kind of goes back to the early stages of the pandemic, right? Many industrialized countries experienced some pretty major shutdowns, so reduced production from key countries around the world. And in response, purchasers of those goods, right, cut their production because they were anticipating that there was going to be a significant drop in demand from the pandemic. And in fact, a lot of the demand actually very quickly ticked back up to where it was or exceeded where it was before. So given the time delay between planning and production and then logistics of the goods and the purchasing, that's what really started this. And then you combine that with the fact that companies in the modern era, I'll say that pre-pandemic, have been increasingly becoming more and more lean over time to limit the cost of inventory, for example, and improve their working capital, just kind of made the perfect storm. So in conversations that we've had with our clients and research that we've done, it comes down to a couple of key categories, and it's a bit of an oversimplification just to mention it as titles alone. But number one, you've got a shortage of processed raw materials, right, that come from some of those shortages. especially in ones that were already where the demand was outstripping the supply. You also have an increase in labor cost associated with producing those goods, which has led to further reduction or more commonly price increases with some of those raw materials to support that. So that's kind of number one. Number two is you've got these production shortages themselves, so not just the raw materials, but the outcomes of that that have not been able to make up for some of those holes in earlier demand. Got some bullwhip effect going on where it's just imbalanced. Either they're asking for too much and they can't supply it, or the reverse. The other big one that we're hearing, everyone talks about transportation quite a lot, and we could kind of break that down into a couple pieces. We're hearing a lot about ocean freight. From the availability of containers is a really big one. The congestion in ports has made major headlines on the news recently, and there's been some movement in private-public cooperation on that front. And I think maybe just one last thought on it, too, is not all products and materials are treated equally in this. Obviously, where you have certain materials where there's a broader supply base globally, or even better, domestically in some cases, maybe there's a little bit less shortage going on in those. But in the world we live, most products are getting smarter, they're getting more complex, or they're getting more global in the supply of all their components. So that means that more complex, more technologically savvy products, it's becoming harder to supply. So that trickles down to things like cars that we've all been hearing a lot in the news about, or chips. So that's just a few things that we're hearing from our clients.
Yeah, so I want to build upon a couple of those themes, and maybe Scott, get your perspective. You know, you live kind of in the world of kind of demand planning for a lot of your career, and that's an expertise that you have. And is it fair to say that some of the kind of the basic kind of principles and foundational elements of demand planning have really been thrown out the window in some regard, right? And companies have been forced to, you know, react in ways that they hadn't had to in the past.
Yeah, in some regard, that's absolutely true, Steve. So classic demand planning takes history and extrapolates it out into the future. When, you know, the future makes no sense anymore, right? The history doesn't apply. And so companies have to be able to use different techniques and different methods to understand what's happening right now and what's going to happen tomorrow. And on, rather than, you know, looking at my demand planner pattern and my curves over time and extrapolating those out into the future. And a lot of companies aren't ready to do that yet, right? It is a significant technical and data and knowledge challenge to be able to do the kind of demand sensing that would support a dynamically changing demand pattern that we're seeing now.
Yeah, so let's build upon that then, because I want to get, if we think about I think we're all aware of the challenge, right? And I think there's many discussions that have been had and will continue to be had around the challenges, but I want to shift our discussion in terms of, okay, what could companies be doing? You mentioned, right, you know, Scott, you know, the idea of like looking back at historical performance and predicting the future, and that's so hard to do right now. I'm not quite sure if we're going to be living in this global pandemic. I hope we're not going to be living in this global pandemic for too much longer. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not quite sure if it's going away, coupled with a lot of the challenges that companies are facing, I don't think are necessarily going away either, right? Mm-hmm. So what should companies be doing to adapt to, while the future might be uncertain, we know some of the challenges are going to remain. What should companies be doing differently going forward to prepare for whatever the future might hold?
Right. So you're absolutely right. You know, is the pandemic going to keep going? Is it going to get worse? Is it going to get better? We don't know, right? Our Clarkson's perspective is that there is no way to plan for the eventualities that are going to happen, right? It's easy enough to look at, you know, what are all the potential disruptions that could happen to my supply chain? I could have a hurricane. I could have a pandemic. I could have a fire at a plant, and put those on a matrix of likelihood and impact and figure out which ones I would address, right? But if we had all done that, no one had global pandemic shutting down the entire world economy within 3 months and then demand spiking through the roof 2 months later. Nobody right. had on their matrix, right? So our perspective is instead of focusing on those events that might happen, focus on the impacts to your supply chain and focus on your ability to resist and respond, right? Those are the two key aspects of resilience that keep you in business, right? Your ability to resist a disruption for a period of time until you can respond to that disruption. And so understanding your own supply chain and the points of potential failure within your supply chain. So if you have a plant that is the only plant that makes a certain product, or if you have a material that is in 90% of your products, or if you have a customer that makes up 60% of your demand, right? Those are potential points of failure that you have to understand and have plans in place to resist and respond to disruptions that particularly attack those specific points of failure.
Yeah, great. So I want to, any other, Ali, Evan, before I jump to the next topic, anything you would build upon some of Scott's thoughts around how companies should be thinking about this differently going forward?
I would just add one thing, just anecdotally. Relationships between CPG companies and retail companies have gone through a roller coaster in the last 2 years, right? Trying to keep stock on shelf. And we've definitely seen companies trying to lean into that relationship and say that they're willing to, for example, increase inventory positions for at least the short to midterm to help buffer for some of the other more known demand events. Let's call it the holiday season, for example, which is on us now and everyone's been preparing for the last several months. So I think there's also an aspect of partnership and, to Scott's point, understanding those key relationships that plays into not just how are we going to act going forward indefinitely in the future, but what can we do to nurture those relationships in the immediate term.
Totally agree. And so, Evan, if we break down resist and respond strategies and geek out on this for a minute, right? Some of those strategies are around visibility, right? So visibility gives me the ability to respond quickly. And I think building those relationships between companies and their retail customers gives some of that visibility better, right? And then the same way with visibility backwards in the supply chain to your own suppliers and their suppliers, right? So certainly that visibility is one of those respond strategies that allows you to see that something's coming and adapt as quickly as possible. And one other thing that I'll throw in, right? So we've touched on inventory a couple of times, right? So inventory is a resist strategy, right? If I've got a pile of inventory, I can resist a disruption for a while. And Evan, you talked early on about how some companies had moved to lean, where we're trying to take some of that inventory out. One of the things that was missed by some companies in that was that lean is not just take inventory out of the system and get more frequent deliveries, right? There's a significant structure around lean that, again, allows you to resist and respond to any of those disruptions that happen along the way. And that structure needs to be there to support something like lean. Taking inventory out of the system, if everything goes well, works really well and looks good on the books. But it's when things start to go awry, if you don't have the rest of that lean structure in place, that you run into significant challenges.
Scott, yeah. I would say to that point too around lean and inventory, I think also in relation to having a relationship with your customer and your supplier and all that, it's also having that understanding of what exactly it is your customer is ordering and having an understanding of what that lead time looks like for how long you need to either obtain that product or make that product so that you can take that into consideration when you are demand planning and setting your trigger points for reordering and all that so that you're not just sitting on loads of inventory, but you're ensuring that it's inventory that the consumer wants and it's an inventory that the consumer can get in a timely manner. So.
Yeah, and I agree. I think that we're going to need to we're going to need to be smarter around all of this, because I don't believe the answer is simply loading up on inventory, because that screams of cost, and that's not the answer either, right? Mm-hmm. You've got customers you need to satisfy, but you also have shareholders that you need to satisfy, and the idea of just we are going to become a markedly less profitable business because we're going to be sitting on loads of inventory to be able to, right? That's not the answer. So I think it gets back to a lot of what we're talking about here, which is being smarter in how we plan, being more agile and nimble where we need to be, being more responsive and resilient where we need to be. However, you know, again, the idea of just sitting on inventory, that's not going to be sustainable from a profitability perspective. I do want to transition, and Ali would love to get some of your perspectives. I know you've been giving, you know, a lot of thought, and then, you know, Evan and Scott certainly as well. We're not the only ones talking about this, and you know, the administration right now is currently thinking about this, and there's been a lot of discussion around work potentially, you know, with revamping the ports with different retailers, kind of increasing their hours and you know, increase in fines, et cetera. Talk a little bit about, Ali, some of what you see from a administration's perspective in terms of activities that they're undertaking to try to get at this problem. And how successful do you think we'll be?
Yeah, so I think the interesting part about right now is for the first time, we have an administration who is not only highlighting the areas of concerns and problems that we're having within our supply chains, but they're also looking at ways that we can improve upon that. And in doing research, one of the quotes that has kind of stuck out the most to me, and I've shared it with Evan and Scott before, is that we are operating with supply chains that were created years ago, hundreds of years ago, that aren't really appropriate or necessarily equipped to handle what we have today in terms of what our consumers want, when they want it, and all of that. So we've had a lot of, as you all know, we've heard a lot about it in the news, and we've had a lot of problems and issues and bottlenecks. And the administration now is taking steps to alleviate those bottlenecks. The first being around ports and transitioning to some of our larger ports operating at 24 hours a day so that we can get containers offloaded and goods in transit. And we saw some of our bigger retailers who reacted to that by also saying that they would start working 24 hours. So the likes of Walmart, Target saying that they would support these 24-hour shifts where they were coming in and ensuring that they were moving containers out of the ports as well. Another big push that we're going to be seeing out of this administration is we're now having a lot of funding going towards transportation infrastructure. So the likes of roads, rails, bridges, all of that being improved to help once again alleviate that bottleneck. I think the important thing to highlight is, although there are improvements that are being made and there's people talking about this, I think to some of the points that we've made already, that things might get worse before they get even better. In talking through infrastructure changes and improvements to ports and improvements to roads, we're going to have to take into consideration some downtime where roads might not be able to be utilized, or we might have to look at utilizing different ports. I know I had just seen recently where Amazon is creating their own shipping containers and utilizing less kind of congested ports so that they can get their goods in transit faster. So I think we're going to start to see, with the push of this administration, also some new creative ways where our clients and customers are looking to kind of offload and utilize what the administration is putting out there. But like I said, it's funny. You sit at the dinner table now and everybody knows what supply chain was. Whereas 10 years ago, people were, you would say supply chain and they would have no idea. So it's a great time to be in supply chain.
Yeah, Yeah, so I would say, as Scott would attest, his kids finally know what he does for a living, right?
My wife knows what I do. I've been married for 28 years. The last year, my wife figured out what I do. If you saw it in the news.
Oh, okay. Now I get it. Yeah, so yeah, I think all of that is. And so how successful do you think we're going to be? And we are not going to turn this into a political conversation. I could assure you that. But what do you think are the where we could realize the immediate impact? Is it around the ports and increasing the hours and retailers agreeing to increase hours? Do we think that that might move the needle? Or are there other activities that we see potentially taking place that we think can have a more tangible impact?
So, yeah, I think the ports are a great first step in alleviating that bottleneck around getting kind of freight in movement, getting containers offloaded so that we can start to address the lack of shipping containers. But again, I think that that is just the first step in correcting one of the bottlenecks. I think that there's multiple bottlenecks within our supply chain and that our clients are seeing right now, whether it's through vendors, like Evan had said before, earlier in the conversation around labor. I think there's a lot that needs to be addressed, but I think that first tackling the ports, I think, is a good kind of first step. And then from there, we'll start to see our clients asking and adjusting in other ways.
I've got one that a number of our clients, of course, have been doing, and the industry, I think it's a good practice. And Scott could probably talk about this for much longer, but in terms of just diversifying supplier base for as much as possible, really just from a resiliency perspective, to qualify second, third, fourth line vendors to provide materials where possible is an act that we've been seeing a lot more focus and time and energy and supply chain and procurement teams working on. So not just thinking about immediately, hey, how do we get the goods that are currently stuck X, get them to Y, but how do we prevent the next fluctuation from causing a major impact on our bottom line?
Yeah, I think that understanding your supply chain, and again, understanding your suppliers and your own supply chain helps you plan for the next disruption, right? Once you're in the middle of this disruption and your goods are stuck off the port of Long Beach, there's not much you can do. But if you were to look at your supply chain and say, oh my goodness, 80% of our product comes through the port of Long Beach, that's an area of vulnerability for us. You can plan for the next supply chain disruption. And I'm sorry, Allie, I interrupted you.
Oh, you're fine, Scott. You always have great things to say. but no, I think we're going to start to see with everything that's in motion right now, I think we're going to also start to see this big push of private sector and public sector working together as a partnership. Whereas before within supply chain, it was separated. You had private doing one thing, you had public doing another thing. But now it's this collaboration and partnership which we'll continue to see. I think another thing we'll see within our clients as well is looking at ways where they can own more of their supply chain. So more vertically integrating their supply chains to have ownership and being less reliant on third party partners to support that. So.
Yeah. The other thing that I think, just again, thinking across the CP industry, I think we joked about, you know, supply chain is becoming, you know, a term that people are familiar with, you know, at the dinner table. But I do think that it's going to, I think that if it wasn't already, I think supply chain is being elevated to the grown-up table within the executive boardroom of CPG companies, realizing that at the end of the day, I mean, just think about what we've experienced over the past year and a half. We've got the dream scenario in the midst of an awful global pandemic, obviously. But from a CPG perspective, you know, massive growth opportunity and demand spiking through the roof, opportunity to take price increase, a lot of different things that CPG companies should drive great benefit for their business. And all of a sudden, we're unable to meet demand, right? We're unable to, like you said, with, you know, demand outstripping supplies, Evan. So I think that supply chain is going to become more of a strategic imperative for CPG companies. And I think we're going to see investments in system and process that's going to need to, you know, accomplish a lot of what we've talked about here today.
Definitely agree, Steve. And I would just back up a little bit of what you said with some of our research too. We took a look at the top 25 public CPG companies just to understand what their executives are talking about in quarterly earnings reports, when they're talking to analysts about any special topics. So we took a look at that data, and what we found is more than a 3x increase in mentions of supply chain alone. Take the context away, but mentions of supply chain in these calls, when you look quarter over the last year, which is pretty fascinating. And there's a little variance by subsector, but just to understand that it's not just things that they're saying, but it's questions that they're being asked, right, by analysts that are representing shareholders, to understand what are you doing to all the points that have been discussed today, to make your supply chain more resilient, to reduce the impact on the financials of future stockouts. So it's not a perfect indicator, but it's directional, right? That companies are certainly, to your point, treating supply chain at the right table.
Yeah, not well said. All right, a lot of problems left to solve, but I appreciate you all sharing some of your perspectives today, and looking forward to future discussions. So, Allie, stay safe out there. Safe travel.
Thanks, guys.
Good night. Good night, I suppose.
I mean, it's 11:30 p.m. I think I got a few more hours before all they right. start to go to bed out here.
That's fun. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. See ya. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening to our discussion today. Thank you to Allie and to Scott and to Evan for your participation and your insight. This topic is absolutely not going away. We wrote about a number of years ago this idea of speed and agility, and speed and agility being really the means that's going to drive competitive success for companies in the future. I still think that that's what it comes down to from a supply chain perspective. Your ability to be as resilient and reactive as possible is critical to success. And again, I don't think that need is going to go away. So looking forward to future discussions around this topic and many others on Taking Stock. Have a great day, and we'll talk soon.